The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
First and foremost, though, Brendan Ogle is with me, the social commentator, trade unionist and activist, to bring us back in time, Brendan, back 40 years ago. Time you remember well, I don't, obviously. I'm far too young for that. But this is the miners' strike in the UK. 1984 kicked off and it lasted an awful long time. But before we get to the kind of particulars of it, what was the context, the backdrop? What was happening in society and politics in the UK at the time?
Well, the Tory government had come to power in 1979, and 1970s was a really tough time in England, and they had what they called the winter of discontent, where there was a general feeling that trade unions were very militant. Rubbish was being stacked up in the streets. There was major strikes in car plants, steelworks, mines.
This is the 70s.
In the 70s. And that made the Labour government very, very unpopular. So the Tories came to power then, led by Margaret Thatcher in 1979, I suppose, on an agenda. And I don't think Thatcher had fully thought it through. On an agenda, obviously, to reform that. And Thatcher being Thatcher, of course, then we had the hunger strikes in 1981, which was a very significant thing. And Thatcher would have taken the view that she won that. Not as simple as that, but that's certainly the view she would have taken. And then there was the Falklands War. And she would certainly take the view that she won that. So the woman, as they say, was on a roll. And then when she turned back to domestic English and British matters, I would say she picked a fight with the miners. Now, look, I heard a clip earlier on where she denied that. I think the 30-year papers that came out 10 years ago kind of proved that she did, actually. But anyway, the National Union of Miners was the strongest union in Britain at the time. Unions were perceived to be very strong. The Tories were elected to take them on. So she took on the biggest in the schoolyard. And they were led by Arthur Scargill. And I suppose never the twain will meet. These were not two people averse to the concept of compromise.
We actually have a little clip of... this is Arthur Scargill, the trade unionist. He was president, as you say, of the NUM, the National Union of Mine Workers. And this is him speaking at an NUM Mansfield rally in 1984.
This government tries to make out that we've got to compete in a totally unfair and unreasonable economic situation. How can it possibly be right to produce the cheapest coal in the world in terms of deep mining, only to be told that governments abroad give to their industries between 20... She was successful in the Falklands, but she'll lose this battle. If 2 years ago, members of this union had been prepared to listen not to the National Coal Board figures or to the government's figures or to the media. Had they listened to what I said and followed the leadership that I gave in a ballot, we wouldn't be in this position today. Make no mistake.
Yeah, that was just a little clip of Arthur Scargill speaking. So he was one of the big characters in this, as you say, and Margaret Thatcher on the other side. We'll come to her in a moment. He mentioned kind of deep mines there. Britain was a big coal mining. There was a big coal mining industry in that country.
From the Midlands up into Scotland, Wales, of course. And the National Union of Mine Workers were a very, very powerful union. And it was ostensibly an industrial dispute between the National Coal Board and the union. But it developed, given the characters and given the stakes, into what I would call a class war.
What was the dispute? Was the dispute pay and conditions? Was it an attempt to close down mines?
The National Union of Mine Workers believed that the Tory government had a plan to close down the pits mine by mine.
Okay.
And of course, many of the working class communities where the pits were relied completely on the pits. Now, the government at the time denied that was the case. But as I said, 10 years ago, the government in Britain released 30-year papers. And the government papers at the time came out. And sure enough, there was the list of all the pits to be closed. So the NUM were actually right about that. So, but it developed then into what I say was an effective class war, where it was really the Tories taking on the... the working class of the Midlands and the north of England, Scotland and Wales, because the rest of the trade union community and the working class manifested and mobilised in support of the miners, or most of them did anyway.
Mm.
And it rumbled on. And then we had a situation where the police were brought into it in a very difficult way. The Metropolitan Police, there's no coal mines in London, the Metropolitan Police were moved, thousands of them were moved into Nottinghamshire, into Derbyshire, Yorkshire, Lancashire. Numbers were stripped off their jackets, and it ended up there was a lot of violence.
Yeah, this is where we saw horses charging.
Yeah, that was the famous Battle of Orgreave. Yes. You were mentioning that before we started, where the mine workers were effectively corralled one Saturday morning and charged by police horses. And I think nearly 100 of them were prosecuted for riot, which carried life sentences. Had they been found guilty, they were imprisoned for months.
Yeah.
Now, ultimately, that case fell apart, and the police, South Yorkshire Police, famous for other things, sporting fans will have heard of them, were found to have perjured and concocted evidence, and the case fell apart in court. The miners were represented by the famous lawyer, Garrett Pearce. But basically, you know, the Tories, Thatcher won the dispute. The union was broken.
Yeah.
She then went on to introduce anti-trade union legislation, the Trade Union Act of 1984 and the Trade Union Act of 1987, which put major encumbrances on unions and how the unions organise, how unions manage themselves, how people are elected, how to conduct strikes, obviously. But then, you know, she then went on then to pursue, it was called Reaganomics at the time, because she was very close, of course, to Ronald Reagan.
Yeah.
And they had an economic philosophy. It was a philosophy of privatising everything that was public.
Yeah, the new right, I think, is that what they call it within the Tory party? So this replaced the kind of the old patrician kind of one nation Tories. They were old hat, the kind of Disraeli Tories.
This is the
new right.
They were routish. And very, very effectively. And she went on then in the years that followed the miners' strike. The mines were gone. The mines were all closed down eventually. Not eventually, very quickly. And the National Union of Mine Workers went from being the strongest union to not being a feature at all.
Mm.
Other unions had then new laws imposed upon them. And then Thatcher went on to privatise water, to privatise electricity, to privatise transport, to privatise communications, to privatise gas. So she basically privatised anything that the British people owned. And that has been the philosophy, that has been the economic ideology that followed through since. That government held on. Thatcher was effectively removed by John Major, but her government, the Tory government, held on, in fact, to 1997. And even when they were replaced by Labour in 1997, Tony Blair had to turn the Labour Party into a Tory party to get elected. So, and that's what we've been living with ever since.
Well, listen, we'll talk more then about the legacy, but let's take a little listen to kind of the woman herself, Margaret Thatcher, addressing the miners' strike at the 1984 Conservative Party conference.
Now, let me make it absolutely clear. The miners' strike was not of this government seeking, nor of its making. The nation faces what is probably the most testing crisis of our time. The battle between the extremists and the rest. We are fighting as we have always fought, for the weak as well as for the strong. We are fighting for great and good causes. We are fighting to defend them against the power and might of those who rise up to challenge them. This government will not weaken. This nation will meet that challenge. Democracy will prevail.
She's on the side of poor people and democracy there.
Well,
the way
can,
she has
you
it.
Can, you can hear how she's pitching it there. You know, if you didn't know what she was talking about, you would think that there was massed tanks of Marxists waged at Dover, about to invade England and take it over. She was talking about mining families and communities there. She was talking about people who went down the holes in the ground to dig out a living for themselves and their communities. And she used that language such as the enemy within. She uttered an entire class of people. And she did it very, very successfully. And the remnants of that are there there today.
Yeah, so what are they? Well, this, the reason we're talking about it is not just because it was such a huge issue 40 years ago, but that it has a legacy.
Well, if you look at Britain from Watford Gap up, you know, there's two Britons. There are entire communities where there's no investment, where there's no jobs, there's no indigenous industries. The coal mines are gone. The steel mines are gone. The steel plants are gone. The car factories are effectively gone. Port Talbot's been closed now. So British industry was hollowed out. And of course, a whole class of people lost out as a result. And England became very London-centric. Financial services, all that sort of stuff. So, you know, and then she went on to follow her ideology. And one of the things she did, which is obvious impacts today, including here, is she went on then, for example, to sell off the state's housing stock. She didn't just sell the trains and the water and the gas and the electricity. She sold the state's housing stock. She basically brought forward an ideology. Her famous saying was, there is no such thing as society.
Mm.
So it became about being the individual as opposed to the collective. She sold off the state's housing stock to the private industry. And she created a situation where housing became not a social need or a human right, but it became a commodity, an asset. And of course, very quickly over here in Ireland, Fianna Fáil government followed suit. We used to have a housing stock. I grew up in one of those houses. And our parents and our grandparents were suddenly, who were paying rent to the local authority for those houses, were suddenly being offered to buy the houses for a couple of quid a week extra. And now we arrive at a situation decades later where we've effectively no national housing stock. Those houses are all still there. They're in private hands. We've got young people who can't get on the housing ladder, and we've got no competition between public and private in terms of housing provision. That's a direct result of Thatcherism. And Thatcherism wouldn't have happened if the miners had won the dispute.
If the miners had won the dispute, she mightn't have prevailed. You might have had a more centrist Tory government or even a Labour government and something closer to a Northern European social democracy.
Well,
is that it? Is that the kind of the alternative history?
You certainly wouldn't have had a neoliberal tyrant, which is what Thatcher became. And you certainly wouldn't have had governments, including Irish governments, but not so much, I have to say, bad and all as they are now. They're not Thatcherites. But we did. We got anti-trade union legislation in 1990, which was a watered-down version of the Thatcherite legislation of 84 and 87. We sold off our housing stock too. We privatised some things. Now, we've held on to a lot.
Yeah.
And I sometimes remind my British colleagues of that when they adopt their normal pomposity. We still have state electricity. We still own our water. We still own our transport, at least some of it. So, you know, we haven't fully gone down that road, but a lot of the world did go down that road.
Well, listen, it happened 40 years ago. There's been some great documentaries actually on television the last couple of weeks. If people want to seek them out, they should do so. We just heard a few clips there of Margaret Thatcher and Arthur Scargill and others. Some of them, you know, they've got the families. They have those people you mentioned who spent their lives in the pit, the communities who relied on them, and great political access as well. So well worth the watch. Brendan, thanks a million for coming into us. Brendan Ogle, social commentator, trade unionist and activist.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.